song by Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys. I was sitting in a crummy movie with my hands on my chin. Violence in this world seems like we never win. Love and mercy, that's what you need tonight. Oh, love and mercy to you and your friends tonight. I was lying on my bed and the news came on TV. There's a lot of people out there hurting, and it really scares me. Whoa, love and mercy, it's what you need tonight. Oh, love and mercy to you and your friends tonight. I was standing at a bar and watching all the people there. All the loneliness in this world, well, it's just not fair. Oh, love and mercy, it's what you need tonight. Oh, love and mercy to you and your friends tonight. Love and mercy tonight. Love and mercy tonight.
Balm, balm for the soul music. So, man, this was a hard topic to sermon on. My. The mercy that I want to evoke this morning is the Buddhist concept of mercy, which is represented for me, and I think for the Mahayana Buddhists, China and Japan, and in the United States, it's represented by Guanyin, who's the goddess of mercy and compassion. Guanyin is understood to have, through her lifetimes, finally achieved what she needed in order to enter nirvana. And she had such great compassion for the world that she decided that she would vow to stay in this world of suffering in order to help alleviate the suffering of all sentient beings. And that choice among Buddhists is called the bodhisattva. And so Guanyin is a bodhisattva of mercy. I have a stone with an image of her on it, and it's a nice reminder to me. So when I think about the idea of mercy, the experience of mercy, I think about it within myself. I think about it beyond myself, with others, and I think about it as potential mercy, particularly in our democracy. Kindness, injustice, which is more than mercy. So I realized as I was doing this research and thinking and writing and thinking and writing and thinking and writing that I needed to reverse the order because it seemed to me that I myself, and I think our Unitarian Universalist tradition, has a really well-developed instinct and muscle for working on mercy in democracy and mercy and justice in organized community. And so I thought I would begin with that and then move towards mercy for myself, which seems to be one of the harder things to do for most of us. And so I know that we are, as a people, wrestling with the idea of mercy, as people in the United States, around immigration, around just so many things, people who have committed crimes. There are just so many ways in which we are struggling with understanding the role of mercy or the lack of mercy in our systems. Mercy in our definitions are basically compassionate or kindly forbearance shown toward an offender, an enemy, or another person under one's power. There's such a strong orientation with the idea of mercy in democracy and in the Abrahamic faith traditions of a God that is merciful and a democracy that is merciful. And it assumes that it's only the people who have power who can grant mercy to those who they control or see as offenders or see as people who should be punished. So, I also know that through listening and reading about science, that it's very, very likely that the idea and the experience of mercy is an evolutionary development. That in fact, for us to live in communities of people together, especially as closely as we live together, that we have to develop tools to be able to not only organize ourselves and structures, but then for those who have power at the top of those structures, there has to be something to try and prevent the abuse of that power. So what an interesting idea that if you have in yourself an instinct for mercy with someone who is either under your control or who has offended or who should be punished, if you have a sense of mercy, it may well be that that's been an evolutionary development that helps us to live together. Who knows? But we do know that mercy is necessary in human community to keep power from becoming corrupt. And we know that power is capable of becoming corrupt, absolutely. So if the people, if religious communities, if the culture values mercy, if a leader cares about being perceived as merciful, then mercy has, as a value, gives us grounding to curb abuse of power. So we as citizens get to use the concept of mercy to pressure whoever has power to define who we believe should be included in that net of mercy. So without mercy etched in our values as a virtue and culture, power in the form of corporations, of economics institutions, of religions, and governments can become quickly self-serving and ruthless. So, and it's everywhere in our news. It was in that wonderful song. You know, it's really hard to see. And in every ism that we know, there's an exclusivity of who deserves that mercy, right? So I feel that, I fear that mercy has been benched in our culture these days, in so many aspects of American culture, and in some ways that this does make sense if individualism and accumulation of wealth drive many of our systems, education systems. economic systems. If individualism and accumulation for success drive these systems, then it makes complete sense to me that the instincts or the structures for mercy would be challenged. So our Unitarian Universalist faith community at large has been in high gear for a long time, bringing pressure to bear on abusive power structures that are abusing what in our faith tradition would be a covenantal obligation to bring more people into the circle who deserve mercy, people who deserve access. So the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee fights alongside of marginalized communities all over the world for their right to water, for women's health care, for just economics, just economies. Our Unitarian Universalist United Nations office does the same on an international level. We have at least eight Unitarian Universalist organizations focused on systems-wide environmental injustices. Many of our congregations and our larger association have for many years advocated, and we've been on the front lines for advocating for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender rights. They belong in the circle of mercy. And now we're up to our ears as Unitarian Universalists speaking out and resisting when the rights of companies overcome the rights of people and the planet. We support immigrants and refugees, Black Lives Matter. We are calling for using the language of resisting agendas that do not include the morals that we believe we are grounded in. The dignity and worth of every person. That's one of the main reasons that people come to Unitarian Universalism. So we always need to struggle, right, around how the moral agenda is defined. Who is inside the circle of mercy and who is outside of that circle? We are living in a society of people with systems organized for survival of our species. And we empower the leaders of our systems to act on our accepted definitions, okay? So there will, and our is a big tent. Our is a huge tent. And so we will always, because we know the universe has somehow popped out, people whose primary locus is to value highly the care and nurture of those who are closest in. And there is another whole group of people who have popped out into the universe as primarily focused. Their moral compass is based on making sure that we make that circle larger. There is a natural tension there. There has to be. The more we run away from that tension, the more we deny that it should be there, the more we diminish the perspective without hearing each other out, the less likely we are to find any kind of balance in how our culture is able to live out that tension of who is included in the circle, who deserves what mercy, and at what cost to the core group. How much mercy do we offer? These are real questions. So if we recognize the questions and the bitter struggles between conservative and liberal in our culture, the more we oversimplify, the less likely we're going to be able to come up with a deeper, wider understanding of what it means to live well together. So mercy is a value. It's a value like values that shape our character. Some would say shapes our soul. I would say that. We could use some mercy now. We could use some mercy now. Let us nurture its growth. Fight for the inclusion of more and more people in that circle of real mercy. Not pretend mercy, but real mercy and care. And so moving from this sphere that we do pretty well in, really, as Unitarian Universalists, we move to the place of living together as Unitarian Universalists and responding to the suffering of those who are among us and outside of our walls. And so what happens to us when we withhold mercy from ourselves? They're having a good time, I hope. I think that's just the glass on the lights. If it becomes the candles, somebody tell me and we should blow them out if the candles are wobbling with the children upstairs. Okay, so here I am thinking about mercy for each other. And, you know, I think you may remember that I worked for 7 years as a Unitarian Universalist consultant for congregations in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and then all over the country. And very often what would happen is that people thought that we were being kind to one another or accepting of one another, but what in fact we did was to lack the skills, because we lacked the skills to be direct with one another about what we needed and what was true for us, we were really having a hard time. We often have a really hard time living in covenant with each other because we are afraid of or not skilled at being honest about what's difficult. So some of that comes from the ways in which we each walk with our own power. And so if you have physical strength inside you, size you have power over, theoretically, those who do not. It might not be in your mind, but it certainly might be in someone else's who's smaller. If you have the capacity to control, because you have a weapon or because of your size, because of money, because of education, you have power over quite a few others who do not have the education, who do not have the money, who do not have, etc. Gender, skin color, all of the isms that we know of are essentially speaking to the reality that each of us carries with us some either earned or completely unearned power that we may or may not be aware of, and especially if we're not aware of it, we're likely to use in ways that are hurtful to other people. And this happens in our congregations all the time. All the time. So what we do is try to live in covenant. And it's one of the most worthy experiments I know of. To live in covenant means there's no one who has power over the other. We have our vision of what it is we understand to be true. We have people who we elect to guide us. We have a minister who is going to bring the benefit, hopefully, of lots of study and experience with other congregations to bear on the questions that come up for you. And then we make our decisions together. We vote. So our covenantal way of life relies on us to be able to tell each other the truth and to hold one another accountable. And that also shifts into what happens if I personally or another is withholding mercy from ourselves. What if you have not been hard on yourself at some point, raise your hand. I mean, there'll be far fewer hands than those of us who have been hard on ourselves and withhold love from ourselves, or withhold a sense of letting go of that suffering that is caused in us when we make mistakes. So, my gosh, the suffering in the world will call us, if we have power or resources, it'll call on us to respond. It always will. There will always be need for us to share what we have. But beyond charity, to learn mercy, to learn how to help relieve suffering, then we as a community need to practice our covenant and learn it in ourselves, to learn mercy for ourselves. And it's different from grace, which is a gift that I didn't deserve. It's different from blessings, which is about the same. It's different from, what was the other one that's so close? Forgiveness. And grace being something that is given when I don't deserve it, you've got mercy, which is withholding punishment from someone you think might deserve it. Whoa, they're different. They're different things. This makes me want to go upstairs. All right. So in covenantal community, we promise to do our best to live honestly together, to be accountable to one another, to these kinds of words and how we live together. And we don't have the authority over each other. We have a reference. We keep bringing ourselves back to covenant. Reverend Susan Frederick Gray says, "It is covenant that brings us out of isolation, out of selfish concerns, out of individualism, to join ourselves to something greater, to become a part of a community that is working to practice love. One of the most worthy experiments I know of." So I think when you practice mercy, you start generating a generosity of spirit that lifts us out of harsh judgment. It brings us together in covenant so that we can nurture a kind of regard for one another without losing sight of how complex life is, right? We're going to disagree. We're going to really be uncomfortable with each other. Without losing sight of those difficulties, we covenant to be present to one another best we can, and then we'll improve because we're going to be honest with each other. We're always challenged to go deeper in truth about who's being included and who's being excluded from community, who's benefited from the largesse of power, and who has been left out. Okay. There is a list called 56 Ways to be Merciful, adapted from a site called alicia.org. The first thing on the list really set me back. It says, resist sarcasm. It is the antithesis of mercy. I had to really work on this one. It didn't make sense to me at first, so I went to the others. You're supposed to just choose one and practice it for a week, and then choose another one and practice it for a week. And I kept going back to sarcasm, thinking, what is that about? So, wow, if I put a sarcastic slant on reality, it's biting. Maybe it's keeping me from expecting too much from something or someone that I think of as either a lost cause, or it's hurt me too many times, or it's disappointed me too much. It sets the bar of expectations really low. Really low. And it's judgmental. So if I use sarcasm to avoid being duped, to not get taken in, I work against the growth of mercy in myself, for myself, and for other people. If our work is to alleviate suffering, then being mindful and avoiding sarcasm could actually teach us something. So it's the Lenten season. Give it a try. Take a week. See if you can abstain from sarcasm. Notice what happens. So for those of us who have been merciless with ourselves, I am quite good at it. I'm much, much better at not doing that than I have been in the past. Let's face it, to become a minister, I had to get a master's in divinity. Are you kidding? A master's in divinity? I mean, that's like 100 opportunities a day to fail. You know, I'm supposed to be masterful somehow of divinity on this plane. My gosh. When I was a child, I grew up in the Methodist Church, and we sang a song that's still in me and still affects me. It goes, Let us break bread together on our knees. Some of you know it. Let us break bread together on our knees. When I fall to the ground with my face to the rising sun, oh, Lord, have mercy on me. It really nurtured me. That sentiment was written into the New Testament readings and the Hebrew Bible readings that were served up by the minister of my time. And that changed. That minister left, and a bitterness grew in the congregation that made things more exclusive. I left that faith because the definition of who was encompassed in that circle of mercy got smaller and smaller and smaller. I couldn't be there. But that song is an expression for me, having become Unitarian Universalist and exploring many, many understandings and experiences of what is core, what is sacred, holy, what is truth to me. I don't need to use the word God. I can use the word God. For me, it's even enough to say, oh life, have mercy on me. But what it is an opening of the heart, like prayer. It's an opening, a practice, to allow the possibility of mercy for ourselves, right? And it means that we create an opportunity to be less harsh with ourselves, less judgmental. And honestly, that generates more spirit to be able to really understand the dignity and worth of every person that we say all the time, but which is so darn hard to practice. We can be more forgiving of ourselves. If we can, you know, sometimes you can't even forgive the mistakes we make. Sometimes it's what we need to do is to say, I did it. It was bad. And I need to move on. I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to move on. And I'm going to do better. That's a kind of mercy. That's an assumption of trust. We have little experiences of mercy all the time when a stranger trusts us and we trust one another. So the practice of having mercy for ourselves is a worthy one because it will also generate more for one another. And every single one of us deserves more space to become who we truly are and open ourselves to the gifts that we have and to enjoy life. So there we are. What I'm left with is wondering, how do we nurture mercy, the capacity for mercy in ourselves, in our community, and in our culture? And part of that is doing it, being a model of it, working at it, failing at it. It's becoming our spiritual work. So I chose the last hymn, Lift Every Voice and Sing, because it's an African-American expression of overcoming hopelessness, of claiming a vision that truly responds to the reality of brutality and mercilessness. When I was looking for symbols of mercy, of course, Guanyin came to my mind, and also the Statue of Liberty. And then I did some research about the Statue of Liberty and learned that's another whole sermon. It is complex. The National Park Service has a wonderful history of the Statue of Liberty, and in fact, it carries pain for a lot of people. So, I will not complexify that for the moment too much, but what we can offer today and enter into is this last hymn, Lift Every Voice and Song, as it's seen and by some as the African-American national anthem. It rings with images of slavery and struggle against racism and the death of hope before it was born. It's a plea to God. It's a prayer for mercy and victory in order to widen the circle. And so, let's open our hearts in prayer and song that our society and we ourselves can create more room in ourselves for mercy. 191. Bingo. 1, 2, 3. Oh, boy.
Places our God where we